Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Southern Illinois and went to work for Warner Brothers in 1967. He's held most every job imaginable in the film distribution and theatrical exhibition business, and in 1980 started MJR Theaters, which today consists of 8 locations, 600 employees, 121 screens, 30,000 seats, and oh, 3 refills on pop and popcorn. His name, Mike Mihalik, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760, WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Mike Mihalik, the founder and CEO of MJR Theaters. Mike, welcome. An honor to have you.
Well, thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your parents?
Okay. Well, I was born in Alton, Illinois in 1947. My father's name was Rudy. My mother was Margaret. I was the second oldest of 6 children. Alton is a river town, an industrial factory town, 15 miles north of St. Louis, Missouri. My father was a factory worker his whole life. My mother was a homemaker and did a lot of things, you know, part-time in addition to raising 6 children. She was a very tough, she was more the disciplinarian in the family. My father suffered with bleeding ulcers most of his life. So my mother really took up the heavy lifting with the discipline with the children. I mean, it was wait till your father got home. And that was really, really in trouble when you got that. So, you know, you didn't want to hear that. So, you know, it was a good Christian family, faith-based. We were Catholic. We all went to Catholic schools, high school, grade school. And
what's the biggest thing you learned from your mom, and what's the biggest things you learned from your dad?
Well, my mother was a very driven person. I mean, once she took something on, she didn't stop. She saw it to its conclusion, and also my mother was the one until she passed away that really kept the family together. She was the focal point, and. In fact, when she got ill, before she got really ill and passed away, I went to her and I said, you know, we've got a lot of family members scattered all over the place. And she took an interest in genealogy. And so we got together and had a big family reunion and got all the on both sides of the family together. And people hadn't seen each other for a long time. And she was in her glory then. I mean, she truly loved doing it. And she did a great job in doing it. And the family thoroughly enjoyed it. My father was an athlete when he grew up. In fact, he played in an industrial league. He had a college scholarship, and I guess in those days you had to play all the sports, and he had injured his knee and lost his scholarship, and so he was learning to be a welder and playing in an industrial basketball league. And actually, when I was a kid growing up, because he never talked about it, I found one of his scrapbooks, and he actually scored 73 points in a game in the 1930s, which in those days the final score was 34 to 28. So that was quite an accomplishment. But my dad was very supportive of me in athletics and encouraged me and helped me whenever he could and however he could. So my dad was a good guy, very well read, and a staunch union guy and a staunch Democrat, and. Was a good guy.
You love golf. You've been associated with Oakland Hills for years. You've been the president of Oakland Hills. We'll talk about that later. But everybody from Oakland Hills, when you ask them about Mike Mihalik, the first thing they say is, he's got a heart of gold. The most generous guy you'll ever meet in your life. Where did that come from, Mike?
Well, I don't know. I've been blessed, and I feel very fortunate to have had the success that I've had, and I really believe that it's a blessing, and the reason you're given that blessing is to share it with other people, and I'm a big believer in that.
What kind of student were you in high school?
Not very good. I went because I had to. I thought I was a jock and I was going to be a, you know, football was going to be my life. And I did what I had to do to get by, which I got to say, I have a lot of regrets about today. I think that, you know, I took piano lessons for 2 years. My mother forced me to do it. I hated every single minute of it. The piano teacher was telling my mother she was wasting her time, that my fingers were too short, and I had no sense of rhythm and so on. But I can't tell you how many times I've gone to a social gathering today and there was a piano, and I wished that I could just play, you know, one or two songs. So, you know, that part was wasted. And really, I think, you know, the better, more education you have, above and beyond making a better living sometimes also makes you a more interesting person.
You were a great football player in high school. Talk about your college football career.
Well, great's a nice word, and I was a very good high school football player, and in college was a huge adjustment. I went to, because of my grades, I went to a junior college for a year, and then I got a scholarship to Arizona State University. It was a big culture shock. I mean, coming from a very small Catholic high school and a small junior college, and all of a sudden you're at a Division I large university, and every practice is like the hardest game you played. And it was quite of an adjustment, and one that, quite honestly, mentally I was not prepared for.
We're talking to Mike Mihalik. When we come back, we'll ask him how he ever got his first job with Warner Brothers in 1967. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Mike Mihalik, who was the president of Oakland Hills in 1999, and he oversaw the $18 million renovation of the clubhouse. That was 1999. That's not 2009. So, Mike, let's go back. 1967. How did you ever get your first job with Warner Brothers?
Well, it was, in all honesty, it was a fluke. I had a summer job in a Hazelwood at a Mercury assembly plant in Hazelwood, Missouri. I was a spot welder on the assembly line, and again, it was a summer job. And I made the determination that, you know, I'd injured my knee in high school, and again my freshman year in college, and I was having problems with that, and I'd come to the conclusion that being a professional football player was not in my future, so I better start thinking about really what I want to do. So I had a couple years of college, so I figured rather than stay working in the factory that, you know, I'd pursue another, not really a career, because really I was just thinking I was going to go back to school and get a degree. At one time I thought I wanted to be a lawyer. And in the meanwhile, just find something to save some money and go to school. And I figured with 2 years of college, I'd rather work with my head than my hands. So saw what my father went through, being a factory worker his whole life. And the time I spent working in the factory, decided that that's not what I wanted to do the rest of my life. So I went to an employment agency. In those days, they had multiple ads. And out of all the ads there, the one agency I went to was owned by a gentleman that used to be in the film business in St. Louis. And Warner Brothers had an office adjoining this office, and they weren't really applying, but because there was a lot of nepotism in our business and relatives, and they had a trainee position opening up, and the guy had said, hey, if somebody comes through that looks okay, send them over. So I went over there, had an interview. He said, yeah, it looks fine. He said, you've got the job, but somebody's got a nephew in the company in Denver, and if he wants the job, he's got it. If he doesn't take it, it's yours. So I kept going on interviews. And I mean, I went to a interview at a chain of drug stores, which is no longer in business in St. Louis, and sat with a guy and, you know, telling me that if I worked hard and did well, I could be someday the manager of the store. And I remember sitting there thinking, boy, that's really good, but I'd really like to do more than that in my life. So anyway, I often wonder, because the Warner Brothers job did happen first, had the drugstore called me first, I frequently think about what I'd be doing and where I'd be today had I not got on the path I got. And I think, call it fate, call it luck, call it a blessing, you know, it was meant to be, and it happened. So I started with Warner Brothers in 1967 in August, and in a trainee position called a booker, which is the general or the person who solicits the dates from the theaters after the salesman made the dates, the play dates, and physically ships the film and gets the film and takes care of the billing and so on. And there was a gentleman that was retiring in 3 months, so I started at $100 a week, and he retired. I got $157 a week. And I had to pay the employment fee to the agency, and it was, you know, I paid so much a month, but it cost me $327 to get a job that started out at $100 a week, which, in hindsight, was the best investment I've ever made in my life. So, one thing led to another, and they, you know, I ended up getting a branch in Minneapolis when I was 22 years old, which was very unusual at the time, but. I had a couple mentors in that company. My immediate boss was a guy named Joe Young, and his brother, who was his boss, named Ed Williamson, and they gave a young man a chance coming out of nowhere and put me in Minneapolis as a branch manager. And I was paranoid about anybody knowing how old I was because I didn't want to get treated like a kid, because I had responsibility for the distribution and sales of all the Warner Brother Pictures in Minnesota, North and South Dakota, which I took very seriously. And you know, there was a gentleman there who had been sick and had been in a play for a number of years, and they kind of demoted him and kept him on the payroll. And that was, he became also a mentor. Set me up the first time we had a meeting. We went to see an elderly gentleman who owned some theaters. And in those days, the pictures are all, well, they still are, bought and sold on a percentage basis. And in those days, you had to go in after the fact and sit down and look at the gross, buy theater, and argue over the terms. And I had no experience in doing this, so, you know, I'd overheard it, but I'd never done it. So I went and I sat with this guy, and again, he was in his 80s, and I quoted him a term, and he became unglued. And I'd met this gentleman before, and he seemed like a nice elderly guy, and he came out of his seat, and spit was flying out of his mouth, and veins were popping out of his neck, and you know, and I said, "Calm down, don't get a heart attack." And he said, "Heart attack, young man, I don't get them, I give them." And so I said, "Well, obviously I'm ill-prepared for this, and let's come back and let's meet a little later on." So I walked out with this guy who they had demoted, Mike Adcock, and he was sitting there smiling the whole time. And we walked out the door, and I said, "You got me, didn't you?" And after that, we became very close friends, and he taught me the ropes, and he was a very valuable asset to me at the time.
You mentioned a couple times mentors.
Yes.
There was a man, Blair Mooney,
out
of Cleveland, that was a great mentor to you. A lot of people are looking at changing careers today. A lot of kids just graduated college, desperate to get that first job. They hear, get a mentor. Mike Mihalik, how do you find somebody great that's willing to be your mentor?
Well, that's a very good question. In my particular case, I mean, you know, I ended up I didn't choose him. I mean, I ended up in working for him or working in the same office with him, and more or less they chose me. I would think that, and I've had young people come to me in the past and say, you know, how did you do what you did? And, you know, I keep saying there's no magic pixie dust where somebody sprinkles it and all of a sudden it just works for you. Number one, you've got to have the passion and the fire in your belly to pursue something. It's got to be something you like doing or love doing. I think Will Rogers said, find something you like to do and you'll never work a day in your life. And all that. So a lot of people think, you know, that there's a magic answer. You know, I've been involved in some film production. And when that happened, I had people coming to me all the time and they'd want to meet with me and I'd meet with them and they'd say, well, how'd you get the money? I mean, everybody, where do you get the money? How do you get the development money? How do you get the financing? How do you get the budget money? Well, if you got a rich relative, you hit the lottery, there's one way, but it's a very difficult road, and there's no magic answer to doing that. In my case, the people that turned out being mentors to me found me, and we got along really well, you know, it worked out well for me. I really, to go out and try and find a mentor today is very difficult, I think, and I wouldn't know how to go about that, to be honest with you.
We're talking to Mike Mihalik. Mike, how did you first get to Southeast Michigan?
Well, the first time I came here, I worked for Warner Brothers. I got moved from Minneapolis to Detroit, and when I was here, I was young. My son was just born, and all the people in my industry were quite a bit older than me, and I didn't really like it much here. And I ended up going back to Minneapolis, and then to Cleveland, and then I ended up and chose to come back to Detroit under various circumstances. To start MJR Theaters in 1980 because a gentleman had passed and I was offered a great opportunity take over his business.
you mentioned that 1980, you get your first theater.
Yes.
How did that ever happen?
Well, when I came here, I started with what they call a booking and buying service, which is a person who represents primarily independent theater owners and negotiates their film deals with the film distributors. And I had a gentleman who was a client by the name of Bob Anthony, who had the main theater in Royal Oak, who came to me one day and said, I'm going to sell it. Do you want to buy it? And I didn't really have any money. And he said, well, I'll make terms. I'll make it real easy for you. And he was at the end of his lease. And the Erb family, Fred Erb and his brother-in-law, Garrett Mao, and their brothers owned the building. And we went and renegotiated a lease. And they accepted me as a tenant. And I did that for almost 10 years and before I turned it into the main art theater. But that was, again, it was, I'll give you one example. I mean, in those days they had the concession companies that would loan theater people money to build a theater, lease a theater, in return for getting a license to operate your concession stand. All the people told me, people in the business said, don't do it, it's a lousy deal. But in those days, I think I paid $70,000. I was able to get a $35,000 loan from the bank. I got $35,000 from a concession company. And in those days, you got accelerated depreciation and investment tax credit. And I got a pretty good tax credit out of it. And so I went in there basically taking no money out of my pocket and got a nice tax credit. And I thought I was the smartest guy in town. Well, the difference is, the percentages you get from the concession company, and you don't start receiving any income from them until they get their money back first. And they're not charging you interest, but the percentage they're paying you, you can make a lot more doing it yourself. So it was an expensive lesson, but again, I had very little skin in the deal. I had sweat labor in the deal, and it taught me a lesson for the future, and it worked out well in the end.
Your golfing partners say that you never take any money out of your pocket when you're with them, too.
Well, I try not to.
We're talking to Mike Mihalik, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Now, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Mike Mihalik, who started with one theater. Today he's got 8 locations, 121 screens, 30,000 seats, 600 employees. Mike, how do you explain the fascination, the magic of movies?
Well, the experience of going to the movie theaters today, even 5 years ago, is tremendously different. I mean, we've tremendously upgraded the theater-going experience with the advent of digital sound, first of all, and then digital presentation now, where we say perfect picture every time, because film, you know, there's wear and tear every time it runs through the projector. Also, you know, the screens are bigger. The seating is better now. There's more spacing between the seats in our theaters. The wider, the lobbies are big. You don't have to stand outside to buy your tickets in inclement weather. But you know what? It's really the movies on the screen. You know, the product from Hollywood, and we're product driven. When we got movies people want to see, they come, and when we don't, they don't. But you know, when you're a small child, you know, a box of popcorn, a drink, maybe some candy, and sitting in a movie theater is an experience that I think probably pretty much every adult can remember doing in their childhood. And it was a lot less of an experience. You know, when I was a kid growing up, and I remember you'd get 50 cents, and the ticket was 25 cents, and the popcorn was 15 cents, and the drink was a dime, and every Saturday you went to see Rodan or whatever the current flick was at the local theater downtown.
I thought, Mike, when Netflix, et cetera, came out, that would be the death of movie theaters. Why hasn't it?
Well, bankers have asked that question when the VHS tapes first came out, and they said, this is it. And our answer was, do you have a kitchen in your house? Well, of course you do. Do you go out to eat? Of course you do. Movies are a shared experience. And there are movies, in my particular case, like a James Bond movie, which I enjoy, but I really need to see that in a theater with a big screen, with a big sound system. I've tried watching DVDs of you know, at home, and it's just not the same, you know, because it keeps your attention. And really, when all these do is they create additional streams of revenue for the people that put their money up to make films. So there's an additional downside for the people that invest in films. to get their money back and make a profit. So the end result is that it creates more product in the marketplace, and the more movies we have the opportunity to play, the better chance that, you know, there's a My Greek Wedding or, you know, anything from there to, you know, to Twilight or, you know, some picture that looks small and obscure that turns out to be a huge hit. And so the more chances we have, more turns at the bat we have, the more chances we have to hit a home run. So
talk to us about the future of movie theaters.
Well, I think that, you know, there's higher resolution right now. The digital is called 2K right now. There are 4K digital projection systems out there. They're just starting to roll them out right now. I personally don't think there's a huge difference in that. IMAX seems to be gaining more traction, and there's more IMAX screens. We pretty well. I don't see what the next thing can be as far as sound. I mean, we're there. We're pure sound. It's you know, it's digital. It moves around the room. It's where it's at. I mean, ticketing at home, you can buy your ticket at home. You can go to the theater now, and you can go to the kiosk with the credit card and spits out your tickets. Some theaters have where you can, you just go up to the ticket taker and he scans your ticket with a barcode that you printed down at home. But that doesn't really change the experience. I think that, and in past, theater owners have tried many different things and with limited success. When video games, some guys loaded their lobbies up with video games. Some guys were renting VHS tapes as well as players in their lobby. And I think every time we get away from what our main goal is, and our main goal is really to show you movies in the best presentation we possibly can, in a clean, safe, and comfortable environment. And I think any time we try to do that, put in a coffee bar or put in a bar, some theaters do that. I'm totally against that, but that's my philosophy. But, you know, every time you get away from what your core business is, I think it's a mistake.
Your theaters are in Adrian, the Brighton Town Square, Chesterfield Crossing, the Marketplace of Sterling Heights, Partridge Creek, Southgate Digital, Waterford Digital.
In Allen Park, we have one. Yeah.
Talk to us about your concept or your prediction about live concerts.
Well, with the conversion to all digital, most of the movies that we play in digital now are sent to us on a hard drive, followed by a key to open the hard drive. But also, some of the movies are being, we have satellite dishes on all the roofs of the theaters, and they're some of the movies are being beamed in by satellite, downloaded by off a satellite. With the satellite, that gives you the ability to broadcast live, like we had last January. We had the BCS Bowl, which with 3D effects, and I think that's going to expand. I think that the concert business is going to get much better too, and they've experimented with it and had sporadic success and with it. But I think that the three largest companies in the United States, theater companies, Regal, AMC, and Cinemark, haven't gone all digital yet, and you know, they're working on that. And I think once that's accomplished, they can go to Top Name Entertainment and say, you know, we can put you on 5,000 movie screens, New York to California and everywhere in between. You can do one concert. You can get half the gate or whatever it is. But, you know, you don't have to spend the next 6 months of your life touring on a bus or an airplane. And you can have all the ancillary, because we could do it at the Hollywood Bowl, and you could film it, and you could have all the ancillary markets still available to you. And I think that might be pretty attractive to certain performers. And, you know, they can go out and do live when they need the rush or the excitement they get from performing live. But I'm not sure they want to do it 6 months, on the road. But anyway, that's one thing that's coming. Sporting events, I think, are going to get, you're going to see more and more of those, with the 3D effects. There's talk of NASCAR. You know, all those deals have to be negotiated. And I know there's several companies that have formed that's their business model, and that's their business plan, is to bring alternative content to movie theaters.
We're talking to Mike Mihalik, the founder and CEO of MJR Theaters. And Mike, at every one of your theaters, you give free pop or free refills.
Yes.
Of pop and popcorn.
Yes.
Why?
Well, I think it's look, prices are high. We're not as high as other venues, sporting events or live concerts or so on. But, you know, that's what keeps you going. I mean, and sometimes people get unhappy about it. So we're trying to create the perception that it's a better value. I mean, we have large sizes. We have bags available there. If you get our large size, where mother comes in with a couple children, she can use the bags to fill it up. We'll give you cups for the pop, to spread with your kids if you want, and you can stand right there and get it refilled again and again. We're also now through September 1st, we're doing free popcorn on Tuesdays. And it's called a staycation, where a lot of people, we're seeing a lot of people that we don't see, and we talk to them in the lobby, and they say, I've been to the theater this much in my whole life, and my wife and I and my children are going now because, we're not traveling, we're not taking the vacation, and we're just trying to, we understand everybody's having a tough time right now, and we want to encourage you to keep coming, and every little thing we can do that, we're going to do that. We've lowered some of our ticket prices, and people have responded well to it.
You've got 600 employees.
Yes.
An awful lot of them are young people.
Most of them.
Talk to us. At our age, they're all young.
Yes, true.
Talk to us about young people today, Mike Mahalik.
Well, here's the thing. I tell my managers, one of the hardest things we have in each building, we have a general manager, and these they've got managers underneath them. And one of the hardest things they have to do is hiring and firing and training children. Because a lot of them, it's their first job. They can get a work permit, and they come to work for us when they're 15 years old and work limited hours. And, a high percentage of them we keep till they go away to college. And if they go to college locally, they come back. And sometimes when they go away to college, they come back during the school holidays, and we still use them during the holidays. If they're not going to make it, they wash out fairly quickly. Not that we don't give them every opportunity, but, they've got to want to learn and so on. I mean, I don't want a kid because, his dad said, if you don't go out and get a job and buy your own gas, I'm going to take your car away from you. I don't want that. I want a kid that hopefully comes from a responsible family and is a responsible person himself and maybe buys his own clothes or pays his own expense for this and that and really is there to earn some money and make a living.
What traits do you look for when you hire a young person, Mike?
Well, we want a neat appearance, and we have a dress code, and we're very strict about the dress code, right down to wearing your name tag. If I walk into a theater and I see a kid without a name tag, somebody's going to get told about it. And the same way, kids are it's like a baby who finds out that every time I cry, I'm going to get an ice cream cone. Well, they're going to cry their whole life. So you got to set the boundaries or the rules. We were very clear with them what they are. They read it. We understand. Employee theft down to letting their friends in without a ticket, giving away concession items to their friends. And they're told very clearly that you might as well take the money out of the drawer as far as we're concerned. And there's zero tolerance with that. And it does happen occasionally. And I've had some irate parents contact me and tell me that I was ruining their kid's life and so on like that. Well, it's tough life and you got to learn young. And I personally, I had a father call me up one time and he said, so what if he let a few of his friends in free? And so what if he gave away some popcorn? It's overpriced anyway. And you're taking this too seriously. And I said to him, I said, sir, I don't know what you do for a living, but I understand why your son's a thief. And he was very irritated about that. And I said, well, that's the way it is. I mean, you can't take things. I don't know where you work. Maybe you take pencils home with you and notepads and cleaning supplies. I don't know. But, for your information, that's stealing.
We're talking to Mike Mahalik, who was also the general chairman of the 90th PGA Championship at Oakland Hills in 2008. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Anything is possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to Mike Mahalik, who loves golf, has been accused of being a sandbagger, and has accused many others of sandbagging. So, Mike, what has golf taught you about life?
Well, life is not always fair. I mean, sometimes you think you hit a great shot and you get a bad bounce and it goes in the bunker or goes in the water. And by the same token, sometimes you don't hit such a great shot. You know, you should always wait till the ball stops rolling before you make any comments, because sometimes it turns out pretty good. So I think if you're a good person, that good things will happen to you, and it all evens out. I mean, you're going to get some bad breaks, but you know what? If you keep your head down and you keep going forward, you're going to get some good breaks, and it's all even. Also, I think when you play golf with a guy, you can tell a lot about him. You can tell a lot about his personality. You can tell a lot about his integrity. It's a great game. I can't say enough good things about it, and I just love it. I love the exercise. I love being outside. I love the socializing with people. And I've met a lot of very interesting people over the years playing golf.
You could talk a lot about their arithmetic ability, too.
Yes, yes, yes.
A mutual friend, Joe Hiranzi.
Yes.
One time I was playing with him at Indian Wood, and some guy had a long putt. It's going right toward the hole, and it's like a foot away. And I said, that's a fabulous putt. And right at the end, you know, it hooked around. And Joe Hiranzi said, don't ever compliment a moving golf ball. That's Hiranzi. So, talk about the value of being a caddy for young people.
I think that's a great experience for a young man or young woman to do that. I caddied when I was a kid, and there was one country club in my hometown, and you had to hitchhike. It was up the river road, and it was a 10 or 15 mile ride up there. And I never liked the hitchhiking concept, but you know, I needed, I wanted to make some money. So I went up there and I had a guy the first time that was not a very good player, but a nice man. And it was kind of funny in the end. He just said, give me my bag. And I said, what do you mean? There was water in front of the 18th green, and he threw it in the water. And he says, I'm going back to my garden. Another time I had an eye doctor who was not very nice. And it taught me about kids too, you know, because again, sometimes as an adult with a kid and having been around this game for a long time, if you got a young kid that wants to learn how to do it, more than happy to work with them, love to work with them. But if you get a kid out there that doesn't have, it's all this talking about in the theaters, having the right attitude about doing it. If he's there just carrying the bag, he's not paying attention, he's thinking about the hot dog he's going to get at the turn and how much he's going to get paid in the end, he could care less about everything else. He's probably not going to be a very good caddy. He probably should find something else to do. But, you know, along those lines, I've met, every time it seems like I go to another place and I play golf, I've got an Evans Scholarship tag on my bag. And at Oakland Hills, we have a separate scholarship for the caddies at Oakland Hills and actually all the employees, a scholarship fund that's a very supported cause at the club. But anyway, people see that. And I was playing, my son is a member at Walnut Creek, and we were playing with somebody in a group in a match, and he saw that scholarship. He said, you know, I was an Evans Scholar. And he asked me if I knew another gentleman at our club who I did, who was also an Evans Scholar. And I mean, every place I go, I mean, they're lawyers, they're doctors, and without that little push when they needed it, and golf taught, and it's great exercise for a kid. I mean, lugging two golf bags around for 18 holes is for 4 or 5 hours. God, as a football player, that would be great strength, a way to strengthen your legs.
You were the chairman, as mentioned before, of the 2008 PGA Championship at Oakland Hills, won by Patrick Harrington.
Yes.
Talk about that experience.
It was a great experience. I'm 62 years old, so I'll say I'll never forget it the rest of my life, which I won't. But it was a great experience. And our club has a storied history of putting tournaments on like this, and just the hard work that I see everybody. It amazed me. I mean, we had rain one day there's always stuff that goes on and just everybody, they take the week off. They're there every day. I mean, from morning, noon and night. And that was a lot of fun, but I mean, you know, I got to do a lot of neat stuff and be around a lot of fascinating people. And I like being around, people like that, because I always learn something from them too. It was a lot of hard work, but a lot of support, and it was a great thing for the club. I thought the club looked great on television. I think to the world, I thought it was a win-win for the club, for the county, for the state, for golf, and we were very proud to be part of that.
This past Monday, General Motors filed bankruptcy. Unbelievable. When we were kids, you know, Chevy, apple pie.
Yeah.
A lot of people are facing adversity that they never could dream of. You've gone through tough times.
Yes.
What do you say to them, Mike?
Hang in there. Just keep your head up and keep walking up the hill. And the easiest thing in life to do is quit and say, woe is me. And I think good things happen to good people. And not that you don't get bad breaks or hit bumps in the road along the way, but just keep your head up and keep moving forward.
You're from a little town in southern Illinois, in the middle of nowhere. Bottom 10% of your high school class. 2 years of college. Why you, Mike Mihalik?
I don't know. I don't know. I think growing up poor was a big motivation for me because I didn't like that, and I didn't... I think it gave me a lot of drive and so on. But, you know... It's hard. I think there's certain things you're born with. I mean, some people are born to be a musician. Some people are born to be an entrepreneur. Some people are born to be, you know, an athlete, and that's it. And I think the hardest thing to do is probably recognize maybe what that gift is and the direction you're pointed in and go there. But if you keep trying, it'll happen. I just really believe that.
Last question. What advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
Get an education. Get the best education you can, because if you don't, I guarantee you, you'll regret it. You'll regret it later in life. Just keep trying. Keep trying hard and work hard and be honest with yourself and the people around you, and treat other people the way you like to be treated.
Mike Mihalik, Southeast Michigan is better for you coming back a second time.
Well, thank you.
The theaters, with Oakland Hills, with your heart of gold.
Thanks
for all you do.
Well, thank you.
Our guest next Sunday will be Mike Busley, the co-founder with his wife Denise of the Grand Traverse Pie Company. You should have those in the theaters, Mike. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohom.